This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday, 10 till 12.
During the week, Macca, the Victorian AIDS Council, along with Victorian Health Promotion Foundation, VicHealth, put out a joint media release announcing a 2-year project to address potentially risking behaviours amongst lesbian, bisexual and queer women living in regional Victoria. And I thought it was a really interesting idea, actually. I mean, I've been aware that there have been some issues in this space. So I thought rather than talking about the project this morning, what we might do is try to understand why this is an issue. What are the underlying issues here? What are some of the stats and the facts that we need to know about?
We want facts.
Yeah. So we've got on the line Amy Penney, who's a research fellow from the Centre for Alcohol Policy Research. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you for making yourself available this morning at such short notice. So tell us, is there a problem amongst women living in regional Victoria of queer persuasion with drinking?
Well, generally, we know that LGBTQI women drink at higher rates than heterosexual women. So the national statistics indicate that there are much higher rates of risky drinkers. And we do find generally in rural populations that men and women are drinking at higher rates than people that live in metropolitan locations. So you combine those two together, obviously, and you're seeing higher rates of risky drinking among same-sex attracted women in those areas.
So, Amy, what's your source for that? I mean, you've obviously pulled together a couple of different data sets to come up with that conclusion, but what's your source of that data? Is that Private Lives research or something else?
I've just used the National Drug Strategy Household Survey, which is the Australia's population survey on alcohol and drugs. Across all studies, we see this. It's much higher in the US, for example. You might find 11 times in their national study alcohol dependence amongst
11 times.
Women. 11 times, that's right. In Australia, for example, using our National Drug Strategy Survey data, LGBTQ women are 27%. Possibility of being weekly risky drinkers compared to 16% with heterosexual women.
Well, that's more than double.
That's right. It's about double. That's right.
And can I ask, Amy, and some of this might be anecdotal, but is the orientation of those women, so let's use the term queer without wanting to categorise completely, but the sexual orientation of those women, does it come through in the research or elsewhere that this is a factor in their alcohol use?
Yeah, and it is important to mention identification, because we do find different rates depending on the way women identify. So, for example, bisexual, and in some surveys there are categories such as mostly heterosexual or mainly heterosexual, we find higher rates of drinking amongst those women than we do amongst lesbian women, for example. But then if you look at trans women, it's even higher again. So it is really important to talk about identification. So queer women or people who identify as queer do have higher rates of alcohol problems than people who identify as lesbian.
And are you able to extrapolate at all what some of the underlying causes for this might be?
Yeah, there are two main hypotheses in the alcohol literature. And the first one is fairly well endorsed, which is that factors related to minority stress increase drinking. I mean, that would be no surprise to anybody that higher rates of mental health, psychological stresses, victimisation, trauma, these sorts of things are experienced at higher rates among same-sex attracted women, and therefore you see higher rates of drinking. There are also a range of institutional stresses, such as institutional discrimination, not being allowed to marry is a perfect example of that, and experiencing daily stigma and discrimination, in day-to-day practices, in healthcare services, on the street, for example. All these sorts of things contribute to what is termed minority stress. So that's the main hypothesis that explains why there's higher rates of drinking amongst same-sex attracted women. The other one, which is not so well endorsed, is the question of whether there is a particular normalisation of alcohol consumption amongst particular groups or at particular social events. So whether there is an expectation for same-sex attracted women that alcohol is a part of their socialising in a different way than it would be for heterosexual women. And the results, the research findings on that are a bit more mixed. Okay. Some studies indicate that there is something extra going on at these kind of events. But we've been involved in some studies which basically show we don't think that's the case. And we think that could further stigmatise, further add blame or stigmatise the LGBT community for increasing their own alcohol use.
So you've identified that there is a problem, an incidence of this. And, in different groups. And I found that interesting that, you said that, the rates are quite different for those who identify as bi, hetero,
mm-hmm. That's right.
Trans or lesbian, that there are different rates. So we now have some data. What do we do with it, and how do we, as a community, and how does individuals address this, particularly because... this is a regional Victoria study as well, which means a lot of those support networks are not there, or they're less formal.
That's right. And it's a really big issue we've found in a lot of our research, is that women that are living in regional and rural areas, perhaps where discrimination is even increased, and they don't have access to the kind of services that we would have in metropolitan areas. And we've talked to women who said, even the local GP, they experience discrimination and they struggle to have people to talk to. So I guess the first important step is that the AIDS Council have realised that this is an issue and that we need to increase funding for research. That's the first important issue. And it's about getting the message out. It's about training the community to be more sensitive, to be more tolerant, to recognise that same-sex attracted women are going to be seeking alcohol services or GPs at higher rates for alcohol problems than other populations. And, we need to get some training out there so that when they arrive at these services, they're not being turned away or they're not being discriminated.
I think, Amy, it's Tass here again. At some future point, we'll actually talk to the VAC about this particular project. But I'm interested in going back a little bit, if I may, to this issue around normalisation and alcohol consumption. And it takes me back to a conversation that I had with a psychiatrist about a year ago, who asked me, why is it that gay men are always taking drugs and going to parties? And I hadn't actually thought of it till now, really. But I wonder whether, in fact, that is sort of part of the normalisation of our culture that does exist. And maybe there is a similar thing that's occurring with queer women and alcohol consumption.
Yes. So we found that the main two, when we talk to women themselves, the main two reasons they're highlighting for their alcohol consumption are reasons relating to coping, but also reasons relating to social connection. So connection and coping are two of the main things that people talk about. And alcohol is important for facilitating social relationships, for perhaps meeting new people. We found it's very important during the coming out phase for women, and it's heightened during that phase, particularly as women are coming to terms with their sexuality, trying to meet new people. I'm not saying that it's not normalised. I guess the research that we've been involved in shows that it's very normalised, obviously, amongst heterosexual women as well. The Australian community are big drinkers generally. And we haven't found that there is a particular normalisation of drinking amongst same-sex attracted women. than there is in the general community. I think as a community we need to talk about alcohol and how normalised and accepted.
Oh, there is absolutely no question about that. I agree. I mean, it's alcohol is one of those legal substances that we tend to use to celebrate, to mourn, to commiserate, to commemorate, to so forth. And it's just such an ingrained part of our culture, isn't it? But it is particularly concerning to hear that the rates of alcohol consumption, risky alcohol consumption amongst queer women, is much higher. Amy, are there, because we're almost out of time, but are there any other key points that you'd like to highlight that have come out of your research?
Yeah, one of the main things that we're particularly concerned about is that same-sex attracted women aren't accessing services for mental health and alcohol in commensurate to their need. And when they do access these services, they're often leaving dissatisfied. They've got much higher rates of dissatisfaction with treatment. And I think that's something that is easy to address. The complex factors that may be increasing alcohol consumption are a lot harder to address. But the fact that women might be walking into services and feeling like their needs aren't met and discouraging them from coming back to services is a real problem. And I think that's something as a community that we should be funding more training and education, particularly for healthcare providers.
And, you know, if they feel they're not getting a sympathetic hearing or that they're not getting any sort of an outcome, it might actually increase their drinking.
That's right. Possibly. Yeah. So, one bad interaction with a service provider could turn you away.
Amy, look, it's a fascinating subject. Thank you very much for making yourself available this morning. If any of our listeners are feeling like they need some support or direction, obviously what we would encourage our listeners to do is to call QLife or Switchboard as a first port of call or Lifeline. Is there anything else that you would recommend, Amy, at this point?
No, there are some great services in the metropolitan area, but again...
Yes, they're metropolitan-focused, aren't they? Mm. Metro-focused.
Conscious of the fact that a lot of regional and rural listeners probably don't have those kind of services available to them.
Yep. Amy, thank you very much for your time. We will learn more about this project as it unfolds and we engage with Victorian AIDS Council on this. But thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.